So yesterday we left off, and I would like to try to move through. We were reading the Rambam, so let's try to finish that, but without much delay. So the Rambam firstly gave the reason of the Isser of Arayos because of they are most commonly available, because they're always around, and the Torah wishes to minimize the amount of Bia taking place, because it's just not good. And then he mentions a second issue, which I have no idea what exactly that is. Who was reading this Rambam? Zach, you were reading? No, you've done enough. I mean, unless you really want to.
I wasn't.
You were, I didn't. Let's tell Mati. Mati, where are you?
Later.
Go ahead, take over. The odds are, by the way, pretty good that if I ask one of you, during part of share, usually at least split share, if you're the Chavrusa, you're probably coming next. Go ahead. Yeah. So he talks about something. I don't really understand what it is. I have some thoughts, but not that I wish to share at the moment. But he talks about the connection between the roots and the branches somehow being a tremendous chutzpah, tremendous azos gedola, ritzon olomar. Right. So in other words, it's not just if they're both. In other words, if they are shorish and anaf, it means they are blood relatives. But not only that, but you also can't. You also can't have. I think. I don't know if she's really saying that here. That one person has a relationship with the shorish and the anaf also. Maybe. Vein hafresh. Go ahead.
Right.
It's on a lomar. Okay. Okay, then he goes on to explain in the small print why some of the relatives then weren't prohibited, and he bases that on reason number one, because they're not commonly in the house together. So it seems to be a combination of the two. And then he writes at the end, the last few words in the piece. Okay, so I'm not quite sure I understand. I would like to be Mavakesh Tom, because I don't know what the... I understand Eishes Ish, that's pretty obvious. Eishes Ish is the only one of the Arayos that I think on some level is not really a hoke at all. But all the other Arayos are on some level, as the Ramban will say, a hoke. But you didn't need that for Eishes Ish. That, you could have figured it out on your own. Alex?
What exactly is this point about
Brochus? What's that?
What exactly is this point about?
I don't know. If anybody has a suggestion, I'd be happy to listen. But I don't understand. Let me suggest a little bit along the following lines. I wasn't going to suggest it, but I'll say it anyway. We use the term, for sexual relations, we use the term intimacy. Obviously, in contemporary society, sadly enough, one gets the impression, I'm not telling you it's the reality in most people's lives, but one gets the impression, certainly on college campuses, that sexual relations are anything but intimate. They may take place in private, we hope, but they're not intimate. Intimate is about a person getting to know another person. That is the definition of intimacy. And that is not a simple thing to do. That is not a simple thing at all. And it may be that the notion that getting to know... And normally in a relationship, it's a two-way street, where each person is sort of on an even footing in relationship to one another, sort of trying to, in some sense, get inside them to understand who they are. If you take someone as Boel, the Shorish and the Anaf, in a certain sense, he gets an unfair... Given that the Shorish and Anaf are closely related, now, it doesn't mean they're always alike, he perhaps gets sort of an unfair advantage in the relationship in terms of understanding one as opposed to that person understanding him. I don't know. That's the closest. I wonder whether there's something about that. Is that's what the Rambam is talking about?
What's the relationship with the concept of Boshas then?
So I would suggest that there's a certain, you know, the what's the opposite of the absent of azus or not having boshas? If you were to pick a quality, what would that be? What? No, the of someone who has no sense of shame, someone who has azus. What would the opposite be? What? Alex, say it. And what is tznius? I'll quote Akiva's mother here. Tznius is what's keeping private, what that which is private, private. Probably heard that definition. So I think that there's a sense of not, that even as one gets to know another person, there are certain kinds of boundaries. And in being bold as Shoresh Vanaf, you're invading that boundary. That's I'm not telling you that's what the Rambam means. That's the best I can sort of work out here. To me, the alternative might be, but I don't, we don't have a classics. Anybody study classics here? Anybody know Aristotle? I wonder whether there's something in Aristotle or Plato that would sort of shed light on this particular thing, because that's the alternative. Certainly, clearly, as did any of you look up Hilchos Deos?
Yeah.
It's clear the Rambam's view of sexuality, and whether it's that of Chazal or not that of Chazal, is very much, he sees the world through an Aristotelian lens. I think that's very, very clear. So it could be that it's something there, but if it's not, that's the only thing that I can come up with. In other words, that's a sort of a starting point. Perhaps you can work on that, develop that a little further. Danny?
I don't know how relevant this is, but in the Schwartz translation of Oren Gufim, instead of using the word boshet, there's the word busha, which, I don't know, may carry with it a certain different connotation, which sort of maybe like the, like less embarrassment than disgust, perhaps?
I don't think so. I don't think busha.
At least having the connotations
of this. I don't think so. I don't think that the word busha has that connotation. I think it's just an alternate form of boshas. I mean, you could go take it to Bar Ilan and search a given body, the Gemara and see if how the two appear. But
I mean, again, like this is it would be less reflective of its given the short century, which is I think what 2002-2003 something like that. It would be reflective less of the connotations in rabbinic Hebrew than the connotations in modern Hebrew.
Okay, so go look up the Hebrew dictionary, go look up some.
In conversation with people, like when people talk about busha,
disgraceful versus just...
You're saying we say something's a busha v'cherpa, right, it's a disgrace, but still I think it's still related to the word... that would be like chesed who, by Ahoso, right? But I don't know. Yes, Matt?
So I kind of thought about this, that reading the idea of Shoresh Vanaf, so maybe there's some sort of inherent hierarchy within that, and essentially you're kind of destroying whatever that hierarchy is by equating the same thing the Shoresh is, Natim to, and the Anaf, you're kind of bringing it together.
Okay, but so it's not fair, given that this is not exactly a precise, precisely calibrated explanation, but it's loose. If you permit me to ignore that for the moment, I'll ask you about Achos Ishto, right? Which is actually not technically, it's not sure you say that, that's not what this is about, because that's not Shoresh Vanaf. That you might just say to me, well, because we're married to one sister and she hangs out with her sister a lot, so she's a Mitsuyolo or something like that. I don't know. So it could be. Maybe. Danny?
Question, is it possibly referring to the fact that the branch, like allegorically, would be growing back into the root? As the normal way for that a plant grows, or I guess reproduces, would be from the root upwards. If it comes back into the root, so that would be seen as something as not normal. So it would somehow be similar to like...
Well, but what I'm not sure because, in other words, if you think about Isha Ubita, right? So presumably Isha Ubita is the Shoresh and the Anaf, right? So it would only be, in other words, I guess, if he was married to the Shoresh and bald the Anaf, it shouldn't be a problem, right? It should only be a problem the other way. The din by Isha Ubita is a man may not be married to a woman and then have bia with any woman within two generations of either direction. But based upon what you're suggesting, it seems that the prohibition should only go in one direction. You could be right anyway. In other words, just once the Torah prohibits one direction, it prohibits both directions. Right. You know.
The idea could be seen to be coming.
Okay.
Or it could be that connecting the root and the shoresh, regardless of the hierarchy, is not the way nature is supposed to work.
There are trees where branches and roots are the same. Right.
Doesn't the second reason have to be different than the first reason? And part of the first reason is that there's a natural way to have Bia, or there's a natural way that Bia should be.
The first reason, I thought, is just common availability.
The first reason is availability, and then he says, and obviously some things are not allowed because they're...
Totally unnatural. Right.
And this, so wouldn't this...
Oh, you're saying that explanation of Shoshvanaf looks to be the nat, then... Yeah. Okay.
Well, we'll be discussing for two different reasons.
Yes, there are two different reasons why it's unnatural, yes. I'm not going to beat this to death because I'm not sure any of us really understand why the Ram is driving it, but okay. But there was Zach, did you have a... No, okay, fine. All right, so Tzorachin, and particularly the Tam Isser B'ilas Nida, I would like to know why is that Mevuar? You know, and let the only thing, right? You know, unless he's thinking along the lines like the Rambam, but he doesn't, see, the Rambam doesn't spell out, unless I missed it, Lekium Hamin in the first part, although he may be implying that. In other words, the purpose of Tashmish being, you know, he says it's only when it's Raklet Tzorech. So it may be part of Tzorech is Kium Hamin, and since a Nida, and it is true, not a technical Nida, but in terms of generally Nida, a woman will not become pregnant. Right? I want to apologize at the outset. There are probably some basic facts of biology that many of you maybe don't know, and I'm just assuming that you know, so please do not feel reluctant to sort of ask. As a general rule, a woman's fertility tends to come, in our context, shortly after she, you know, around the time she comes back from the mikveh. In other words, in a 28-day cycle, it's usually smack in the middle. And certainly during the period, once she gets her period at that point, it is highly unlikely, highly, almost not impossible, but highly unlikely she's going to come pregnant through Bia when she's in Nida, certainly in the first week of being in Nida, and probably even a little bit after that. That's the reason I may have mentioned this, in Seder or to some of you or in Shir. Women who have very, very short cycles, women who tend to bleed a very short time also tend to have short cycles, but because they have to wait, typically, you know, initially for Ashkenazim, no woman can go to the mikveh before 12 days has passed under normal circumstances. In other words, 5 days automatically because of that thing I mentioned to you about Polat HaShechvazera, she can start counting Shemitikim after 5 days. Not all women actually have stopped bleeding by 5 days, but if she only bleeds 3 days, but she still has to wait Shemitikim, but her cycle is also likely, or in many cases, much, much shorter, and therefore by the time she goes to the mikveh, it can almost be too late. That's what they sometimes call Akara Hilchatit or something like that. So that's an issue that posts can deal with. But generally speaking, a woman is not going to be fertile when she's in Nida, certainly not real Nida, and even for a good few days afterwards. So maybe that's what the Rama means, that it's Mavur, because it's obvious, because if on some level it's supposed to be Litzorach, so by a Nida, what's the particular Litzorach there? Don't know. Is there a question from this side? Yes, you did, Jeff?
As for the last line in the Rama, could it just be saying that it's been Mavur, the reasons provided for Arias for these cases as well.
But right. In other words, Ein Tzorach V'Tam implies that
you don't want to see Ode or something. You don't need a further reason.
Okay, but again, how would it fit with what came before? Again, forget Eishes Ish, I wouldn't explain. I hope an Eishes Ish is not Mitsuyalo, right? Otherwise, there are other problems. Isn't that kind of overlooking the obvious reason for Eishes Ish?
Yeah.
Right. That's hard to believe. Now, when he says Mavur, it's not what he said before, Eishes Ish. It's because it's a basic betrayal of another... let me put it to you this way. In contemporary current events, as I'm sure some of you are aware, some people seem to think that there's nothing wrong with adultery and nothing illegal. And the truth be told, of course it's illegal. It may not be illegal in the penal system in terms of criminal law, but it's a breach of contract as a general rule. Right? That's what a marriage, certainly in contemporary American terms and halachic terms, but certainly in American terms, a monogamous society implies exclusivity one to one another. I know it's unromantic, but a marriage is really all a contract. Until recently, the notion of romantic marriage was primarily an economic contract. So violating a marriage, adultery, is a breach of contract. Their own?
Let's say, saying he should issue the divorce because, it's a breach of contract, but let's say, the husband agrees to it.
We have chuvos like that in the modern period. Yes.
I'm saying it can't totally just be.
So the answer to the question is yes. There are situations where you can find situations where it doesn't violate the Ben El Mechaber aspect, and yes, the Torah doesn't distinguish. But to borrow Rabbi Harlap, I've never seen it myself, quoting me from Roger Williams, who pointed out, even though it depends how you have to read Rabbi Breuer's article and how you count the Aser Debros, there are two halves of the two tablets, and the first one are the Ben Adam Lamakoms, and the second one is Ben Adam Lachaver. So yes, there is a component of Ben Adam Lamakom in it, but primarily adultery is a Ben Adam Lachavero violation at its core, right? Yes, you can come up with circumstances to beat it. By the same thing is true by Ritzicha. There's a very important tshuva of the Binyan Sion. It's Chelek Beis, Rav Yaakov Edlinger, who was the Rav of Moravia in the mid-19th century, one of the major poskim in the 19th century. And he has a shita, even though it's a fringe shita, that you're not allowed to take someone else's property to save your life. So he himself asked the kashan himself, if that's the case, why do we say that there are gimel averos for which are yeherit v'al yavor? After all, ritzicha, you don't need to tell us that. It's a violation of ben l'chaveros. So the answer is, there are cases of ritzicha that are also only ben l'makom. If a person is dying, is in horrible pain, if a person is in a state of life that they would want you to pull the plug, so it's not a violation of ben l'chaveros, but it's a violation of ben l'makom. But at its core, ritzicha is a violation of ben l'chaveros. Right, so yes, you can come up with scenarios of losinaf that are not ben l'chaver, they're only ben l'makom. But I think
when that at its core, it's just issues ben l'chaver and not ben l'makom. Because you get the same punishment, you get.
No, it's true, but you know, you're asking me in effect to prove the unprovable. But I think that from a societal, let me put it this way: I have no expertise in this matter, but I think it's a pretty good bet that if one were to do a statistical analysis of the number of times a married woman or married man, taking our society, had a physical relationship with a woman not, or our husband, a man not, you know, their husband or wife, I would be willing to venture to guess that well in excess of 90% of them would be without the permission of their partner. So you're asking me to prove the unprovable, right? And I can tell you that it's on the side of the Aser Sedibus with Lo Sirtzach, so you tell me that's also. It's on the side with Lo Tignovu. I guess if someone permits you to kidnap them, it's not kidnapping. So that's only Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, right? Lo Sachmod, and I'm stuck in the counting mode. Kibbut Avim is a little complicated. But you can ask me, I always like to tell people, Kibbut Avim is a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, because there are many times parents don't deserve, you know, kavod or more from the children, but they get it anyway. But still, at the end of the day, it's still fundamentally a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, even Kibbut Avim. And Lo Sachmod certainly is. So, again, does that prove it? Do we really have to accept Roger Williams' drush here? No. Rabbi Harlap told me, more important to us, his point was, if religious people don't keep the things on the second tablet, no one's going to listen to them for the first tablet either. That's an important point. But anyway, so I think it's sort of, for the and certainly, I would venture to guess the following. There is a famous tshuva. I think it's in the Noda Behuda, if I'm not mistaken, unless it's the Noda Behuda, about a woman had the following shaila. A man came to the, that's the wrong way. No, never mind. He doesn't have. That's not that. That's the Eliyahu Navi Mashiach story. Never mind. That's not such a case. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this, where the husband gave permission, but I think I think until that point, I would be surprised if you find anywhere in the literature such a mitzvah. Let's find me a case. I don't want to tell you bivadaos, but I've never recall ever encountered a passage in Chazal, and I don't have any bikias even there, but certainly not in Rishonim to tell you. I don't think you have any such mitzvahs. The only cases you have that I know of that even come close to that, but are really not that, are a woman who thought that it was mutter, right? But what I would just tell you, mitzvahs, it virtually, I'm not telling you it could never have existed, but it virtually didn't exist. So it's hard to imagine that they could even thought of a scenario, the Rambam when thinking of a scenario where the husband gave permission, it was only a violation of Ben Adam L'Makom. it at least should be enough for you to accept that in the Rambam. You could think the Rambam is wrong.
The Rambam says that also Bilas Nida is Mivuar and Yitzhar Tam. So like, to him, it's to him that like even Arayos that are Ben Adam Lakom entirely are to be Mivuar and Yitzhar Tam.
No, listen, a lot of mitzvahs Ben Adam Lakom, we understand the reasons why.
Right, but like, whatever. There is clearly some sort of gap between the way we think about these issues and the way the Rambam does.
Yeah, but I would argue that, again, in the case of issues, you can come up with a scenario where today we have people who are dedicated to this as a cause. They're a very small fraction of society. I don't think the Rambam would have conceived of a scenario in which there was a losinaf that was only a Ben Adam Lamakom. Okay. Now, Yehuda?
Just quickly, the Kapach translation is Barur Michdei L'Chapeh Slotam.
Barur?
Michdei L'Chapeh Slotam.
Okay, but it doesn't. I don't think
it does. It helps you say the mevuar. It explains how we know that it's not that he already explained it.
Oh, okay, fine. Then, yes, I didn't think when he said mevuar anyway, he meant I explained it already.
No,
he would have used, by the way, you know what he would have used, assuming that the Hebrew is accurate. He would said kvar be'arnu is the term he would have used. That is a term that he uses. What?
Ibn Tibon would have used.
Okay, right. So kvar be'arnu is a very common expression that the translators in the Rambam. I don't think whatever. So. Fine, so that makes it, assuming that is, you know, more correct. There are issues with...
More correct, it's just that this is ambiguous and this is clear, so it's likely that...
Correct, but you don't know whose translation is better. Rav Kapach may have known, depending on who did the... If the truth is, if this is Ibn Tibbon was a better translator than Rav Kapach. Rav Kapach is better than most of the other stuff, but Ibn Tibbon not only knew the language, but he knew the contemporary language with all the shades, which is something that's the only deficiency in Rav Kapach's translation, which is medieval Arabic and modern Arabic are not necessarily the same, especially in sort of the mashma'ut, or, you know, the subtleties of the language. It's very hard to get back sort of into the medieval set mindset when you don't speak the language and it's not part of your culture. So, anyway, okay. The Rambam's antagonist, the Ravid. I don't think he was truly antagonistic. I think the Ravid, someone told me once, someone asked Rav Lichtenstein about it, and he thought that the Ravid's comments, generally speaking, most Rishonim were really just rhetorical, except for the Ravid about the Baal Hamor. That was personal. Okay. And if you want to know what the Ravid had to say about the Baal Hamor, don't look in the back of the standard Vilna Shas. You got to get the original Kasav Sham, because the Ravid was, you know, he was as good as Donald Trump was. Let's go. All right. So anyway, he did not. What you see in the Ravid, like in the standard Vilna Shas, and I think even Oz V'Hadar now has gone back to the sanitized version. The early Oz V'Hadars printed it uncensored. He was, you know, this was just not Ve'eno. You know, this was, you know, calling him the Baal HaChoshech was the nicest of the things that the Ravid had to say to the Baal HaMor. Okay. Anyway. So let's take a look at the Ravid, Mati. Start with the first paragraph. The Alkain. Okay. So you'll notice that there's a little, not a complete parallel here. In other words, if you read carefully, it's you know, the husband's job is l'rachem alah, the wife's job is la'ovdo. Okay, I don't suggest that you put that on your shidduch resume. Then v'alkein.
Very merciful would be a bad thing.
What's that? Very merciful is fine, but if they think you're talking about the ravid and your expectation is that the girl you go out with is going to serve you, so.
Well, but if she knows that much, then.
The Alkain. Yeah, guys, those of you who are not married should be very careful about what you say, because this is recorded and posted, so.
What about those of us who are not those of us who are married?
To make it clear, it was Ben's here, you just said it.
Those of you who are married, well, you know. Go ahead. Mati, go ahead. Alkain. No, you grow. Okay, so the Torah, therefore, as part of a husband's obligation to wife, commands that he feed her and clothe her and be intimate with her. Now he continues. Why do we have need, though? Leman.
Anya Daradam, Kiesha Borea Moshova, Sam Loho, Iskabro El Isha, Kasher Sam Eskulka, Okumatanosada.
Okay, so basically he's going to go the rabbi. We don't have to read the whole, everything in between. Basically, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us things in the physical world, he imposes restraints as a reminder that he is the Baal on everything that he gave us. And therefore, if you go down to the third to last line, Gamal Isha,
Asher Nasan
Imola Azro.
Sam Lochot Mishpat Sham Yisau.
Okay, so that's the paraphrase from Mara. What's that? So he placed limits. Okay, that's because it's just rhetorical. It's not actually a makor for anything. Vayitzav Alav, go ahead. Horos, probably. It's like a branches. Upanim shonim udrachim mechulakim. And he's going to go, and this other stuff as well. He's talking about the onas aprisha. Okay, so the Ravid basically understands is that the purpose, in effect, I don't want to say it's not the Ramban's kedoshim to you, but rather it's a reminder that the Ribbono Shel Olam is our ruler. So in all of the activities that we engage in, all of the mundane activities that we engage in, whether it's earning a living, plowing our field, whether it's eating, how we spend our time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always imposes certain restrictions as to remind us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. You hear that?
The advantage to this is he doesn't have to explain each individual detail, because all the details automatically explain, because each has some restrictions.
Correct. Well, you know what? I think that's true in general in Tamei HaMitzvos. You can give a reason for a mitzvah, but then there are details that aren't always clear, but sometimes the details are the details because you ask, why is it this way? So my answer is, well, if it was the other way, you would say, why is it that way? Right? So there have to be, you know, some details.
It's especially good for that because it has to be arbitrary and specific.
It doesn't have to be arbitrary. No, it doesn't. Now, the Ravid is not going to say that there's no... The Ravid doesn't explain why the seventh... Why when she's Anita. He explains why there is a concept of Prisha. It may be that I would presume there's a logical reason why Anita. It could be because it's infertile by definition. It could be because it's, you know, not pleasant for the woman. There could be all sorts of reasons for the Pratim, but the overarching structure of having a separation is the person knows that there's a Borei HaMoshalalam. But that doesn't mean that the details have to be arbitrary. Sometimes they may be.
But there's also, I think, what you might be getting at, which I think, is this isn't a reason for the Arayas.
This is just Nida.
It's just Nida, so I don't think...
Maybe it is just for
Arayas,
too.
No, but
you
said it's...
The Baalei HaNefesh is a sefer in Hilchos Nida.
Right.
Okay.
You mentioned specifically, like, Prisha from your wife. Not that...
Well, because there's no one else you're allowed to be in the first place. He's not explaining any of the other Arayas. The other Arayas, whatever the reasons are. But once you're allowed to cohabit with your wife, so why does the Torah impose this restriction? The answer is because you should understand that, you know, even a husband and wife, they have to remember, you know, that they have a borei, you know, Moshe Aleihem. Judah?
So the whole enterprise of Tamei Mitzvot doesn't mean that your Moshe Aleihem didn't have reasons for a Mitzvot. It's just that we don't, that they're just not necessarily revealed to us. So when we talk about details being arbitrary, it doesn't mean that
I would just say that it doesn't mean it is arbitrary. It could be. Now, sometimes, look, maybe every detail has its reason, but sometimes there has to be, you know, a way of doing things, and there's no, and no matter which way you do it, you're always going to ask why that way, not the other way. Does it really any better one way or the other? Well, sometimes maybe there is a reason, we don't know what it is, but it's, I'm not uncomfortable with the notion that some details are there just because they have to, you have to fill in certain things, and it could be that there could have been two equal possible paths, and one was chosen because just it had to be. Okay, so that's the Ravid's approach. The Ramban has his own approach. So first he attacks the Rambam and the Ibn Ezra's position, because his argument is that the Torah allows, in other words, the idea that that the Torah doesn't want us having so much tashmish. So the Ramban says, look, the Torah permits you to have as many wives as you want, and a person could be engaged in tashmish all the time. What different? So the Torah didn't restrict that, and he also doesn't understand Really, I mean, although the Rambam seems to have given some explanation, but obviously the Ramban doesn't buy it. Why should the man marry his daughter, right? In the same way that we say that it's good for a person to marry his niece, that's what Chazal thought, it was a mitzvah, because they thought it would create shalom bayis. Maybe it would. It might also create genetic issues, but they thought it would create shalom bayis because the love that he and fondness he had for his sister would transfer over to his niece. So the Ramban says, what's so terrible about, why shouldn't a man marry his daughter? What was wrong? Yaakov Avinu after all married two sisters. Why was that so? I was going to say, why was that so bad? And the answer to the question should be obvious. Okay. Any of you ever want to sell your brother? And you probably have the same father and mother. Okay, so so the Ramban says he doesn't buy that. And then he writes, go to the underlying portion, Mati Gai, Ve'ein Bi'odeinu, it's Soda Ibor, but he doesn't mean the Soda Ibor as we usually use it. Ashakvara Maslow. I don't remember exactly what this is. I suspect that this is the same issue that he talks about by Yehuda and Tamar and the business of Yibum. It has a number of places. I'm not sure, but this could have something to do with Gilgal and Shamas. Not sure. But when the Ramban talks about Sod, what are you supposed to do? Read on. Okay. Fine. Now he continues. Read the small portion. He tells you to do that in his Hakdama to the Torah. He says, don't bother trying. So, I'm not going to bother trying. Bida, continue. Right, if it's not likely to be produce good offspring, the Torah doesn't permit it. The Torah prohibits it. Zetam.
Did they know that about relationships?
I don't think so. I do not listen. I can't imagine they would have encouraged niece. And again, remember, clan marriage of one kind or another was pretty common in the ancient world. Maybe even common still in some parts of the world. But I don't think they had any clue. You know, even if it, it's not impossible that somebody could have picked up on the possibility that that certain genetic defects were being reinforced by that. I don't ever get the sense that that was the case. Okay.
Zetam el kol she'er v'sara, yes she'ero he'ara, yartin kedavar m'bnei she'er. Ha'olasher nigzar min ha'nishar v'tziyam ha'nosad v'mishulam.
It sounds like almost the leftovers or something like that. It produces the leftovers. So l'kach yomar.
L'kach yomar she'era he'na zimani.
Right. It's not really kolomar.
Kolomar e'na nesuin v'ishu.
It's not real marriage. It's just zimahi. It's lewdness. Why? Because kilo yatzliach. Right. It's just a carnal desire, but nothing productive. And now he continues. So Judah, this is what your comment was, fundamentally correct. A chok doesn't mean there is no reason, it just means the reason is not revealed. So the decree, Yehuda?
It's more subtle than that. He seems to be saying the so does explain it. He doesn't explain it to anyone. Zula Taylor Chokme Yotza.
No. I would argue... I'm sorry, say what you're saying?
I'm saying there is an explanation that's understandable by people. Maybe it's the Sod thing he's talking about, maybe it's something else. Just, because he doesn't say in Ain, there's no explanation, it's Zulat Helech of Meir Tzah. It's only his officers.
No, you think that then he thinks he's one of the officers? I don't think so.
Sure.
I think that, I would say the following... If anything, I would argue that when he talks about the arayos, in other words, you could argue, I think this may go back on the fine print that I put in it, the small print. In other words, the idea that the mishkal is a davar meruchach benimas betorah zulas lekimin, that's a chok. Right? Because why not? So what? What's so bad about it? It's not lekimin. Right? The reason why... In other words, the reason why certain arayas are prohibited is because it won't be lakim amin, it won't produce good zera. But the question one may ask is, but so what? Okay. So that, I think, may be what he means by it's a chok. The
so
fact...
That wouldn't explain ishes ish or anything like
that. I don't think the Ramban would say ishes ish is a chok. He's talking about the arayas on whole. That's all. Jacob?
V in general, isn't that his line of Z and Akshara Tala Bilhad? He doesn't like V, it's just giving him like physical desire. There's nothing really.
But again, so you're not hurting anybody. What's so terrible about it? What, if the Torah hadn't prohibited these things, would we have known them? Usually we distinguish between chok and mishpat is that mishpat, and chok is not necessarily without a reason or without even a somewhat apparent reason, Yehuda. But if there is chok and mishpat, I think, the way Rashi usually defines is mishpat is something you would have instituted on your own, even if the Torah hadn't given it. Chok is something that you wouldn't have instituted on your own, right? So I don't think you would necessarily have instituted this chok on your own, right? I could figure out sort of a reason for it, perhaps, you know, but there's nothing compelling about it. Right. In other words, the Ramban's reason, Yehuda, is to why the zera is why these things are prohibited because they don't produce good zera because bia should only be lekim amin. But why should bia be only lekim amin? So you enjoy it, very nice. Right. In other words, look, you're allowed. You have to eat food. You're mechuyev to eat food lekim amin. Should you eat food beyond that? The answer is you don't need to. You know, does the Torah prohibit it? No. Right. So in the case of arayos, it does prohibit it. The question is why? And the answer is, that's exeris hakasa. Danny, do you have a question or not?
I think you answered it.
Okay. Zach, was that?
Yeah, I don't know that that example is so good because, I mean, for example, it just seems that, like, this, what the Ramban's talking about here is when you have a relationship which can only be mafshedes tied on the law. Meaning, you could have lots of... For your example for eating was wrong with it, is that it's for kim hamin, but it's also like it's a part of the day, like it's the way you live normally. So the way you live normally with a woman can also be for taiva. That's not a problem. But when you have a relationship that's completely taiva, the only possible purpose of it is that, that's going to be the Rambam's problem. And that's not so much of a chok, I don't think. And that could be, go back to the Rambam, what the Rambam was saying.
I didn't understand what you didn't like about my analogy. It's okay to not like my analogy, but I'm not sure. In other words, I can eat enough. I have a meal, and I eat enough food, and it provides me the sustenance I need. And now I decide to go have dessert. Your doctor might tell you maybe you should skip it, but the bottom line is the Torah doesn't prohibit the dessert.
Right. The Torah doesn't prohibit a category of food that has no purpose. The Torah does prohibit a category of people who sleeping with them has no purpose.
Agree, but why? If it doesn't prohibit one, why the other? I understand why sleeping with them is...
Because there is no category of food that doesn't exist where you couldn't get nutrition from it. Whether there are arayos, there are people who you cannot have a relationship with that's other than title.
I could. Coca-Cola. Right, there are things that are completely useless from a health perspective, but we don't prohibit eating it. I'm sorry?
Ram does say in Yechol Seos that one should refrain from eating things that aren't.
That's the Aristotelian speaking again. I mean, yeah, we would agree with that. It's true, but it's not prohibited. It's good advice. Good advice, yeah. You did, yeah?
On the view, you said yesterday that they viewed Zera as some life...
Life force, yes.
Yeah, then, I mean, that's a little more serious than COVID.
Well, it might be the same thing, actually. In other words, there was an article recently on the web about your body on Coke after 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Wasn't it totally...
Which Coke is it?
I'm pretty sure it was, like, totally exaggerated. It was a picture.
No, maybe you want to think it was totally exaggerated. Clearly, I've never, you know, I don't have...
One guy's subjective experience.
Yeah, like 30 minutes after you drink one glass of Coke, like, you have uncontrollable... Your liver is, like, uncontrollably tainted or something like that. It was ridiculous.
Just look at America, and you'll...
I'm not saying soda is good for you, but it was like, you're going to, like, there's a good expectation that you'll die within 30 minutes of it.
He didn't say that.
it was close to that.
Do you like Coke?
I don't drink it much, but it was, like, I don't like things that are stupid.
Cold action person here. Okay, yes. Was there a question back there? Joe, no,
I just want to agree with Zach that, like, I think it's very intuitive to say, that it's like a whole category of bia that's totally not constructed at all and entirely for taiva is like, I mean, it's different than like eating dessert. I mean, like obviously we do have this sense that like people who are like can become like consumed by like the and it's much more like powerful drive, and it's like much more dangerous than like
food is a more powerful drive. It's one of the only thing that's more powerful drive than sex is probably breathing and food.
No, I think eating.
But people look just. I mean, in all seriousness, look. People become just obsessive about food.
I mean, they can become. I don't think.
And it's common.
I don't think they become as obsessive about food.
No.
And like,
it's hard to measure. I don't know.
There's clearly something just more insidious about like becoming obsessed with sex than about becoming obsessed with food. I mean, like it becomes associated with lots of other dark things.
Well, I think that's only because that's only because we stigmatize it.
It also involves a different person, so it becomes like selfish. And there are like philosophers. Berkowitz has like a whole book about this, and he really thinks that like the sex drive is dangerous because it like involves a different person, and it's like it's this act that can be either totally selfish or totally selfless, and like can be constructive, and like therefore like if it becomes perverted, it's much more dangerous.
I would question whether or not you can harm other people, but. Assuming that nobody is doing anything that actually involves physical harm to other people, I wonder if that's just imposing a social construct upon it. From a biological, I'll just point out, from a biological basis, the damage done from food, you know, and certain kinds of food is probably far in excess of the damage done by...
I'm not saying biological, I'm saying social and psychological, and like the way it affects and undermines a society, it makes it like a like much more like dark society, and much more not, and much less tsanua, and much more like obsessed with the body.
Okay. There's no point sort of going down this road further.
There are plenty of people who see it like, and I'm one of them. We just see it as very intuitive that like that be a just the taiva. It makes sense why to some degree you'd want to limit that. And it's not just me. Like Elias Berkowitz, like I found it very convincing, and he actually thinks that it's intuitive and it's not a chok to say that like we should be limiting this to only contexts where it could be.
So I won't pursue the argument further, but I'll make reference just to the following observation, and I think you may even had a reaction the other day when I mentioned it. You didn't say anything. Just an observation about how much social attitudes sort of matter, and it's the issue of homosexuality. I think when you go back 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, easily, right? It was viewed as deviant, as the worst sorts of things. If you go today, there are lots of very decent, ethical, moral people who don't feel the same way about it and feel the importance of allowing people to find intimacy, and for people who are gay can only find some of the same sex. When you strip aside any religious considerations one has, think it's perfectly reasonable. I'm not telling you which position is correct.
Right, so
I'm just telling you that those very same people in a society 50 years ago looked at it completely differently. So,
yeah, I know. So
that's why I'm wondering whether
someone's right and someone's wrong.
It's true. It's true. But
I
agree. Someone's right and someone's wrong. But you're presenting your sort of own intuition, and what I'm suggesting is that the intuition is not obvious to all.
Yeah,
that's all.
I know. So I'm saying, okay. The idea that like that some things are obviously given, some are obviously mishpatim, it's like not at all clear because like some people just have very different intuitions from other people. Like you said to Jacob, like, oh, if you were making the Torah, would you have proscribed this? But like, you know, if you ask that, some people say yes, some people will say no. So like,
okay, so
it's not clear what the line is between a chok and a mishpat.
I think it's fair to say, okay. All right. Accepted. If you don't want to accept sort of my suggestion, you have to explain the Ramban differently, I think. In other words, unless the Ramban, and I doubt it, thought, as Yehuda was suggesting originally, that he was one of the Yoatzei HaMelech who understood the Tam. Okay, fine. The Ramban now turns his attention to Nidav, Elishab and Nidav Tomasa, and here he says some things that are very interesting. I don't want to read all the Ramban, so I'm just going to sort of present it. I assume everybody started the next set of Mekoros, right, on Pischei Nida. So I just want to quickly go through sort of the rest of this. Not going to read all inside. The Ramban seems to have this idea that there's something very damaging about a Nida. One of the things that's really interesting, and this is not news to you, that Chazal and sometimes medieval science differed from our science. In fact, Chazal, I suspect, might not have agreed with the Ramban on this. The Ramban, and I don't know if this is a Greek medicine, I'm not sure where it comes from, the Ramban believes that a fetus is formed from the combination of the zera of the man and the blood of the woman. And you have to think about the metaphor of zera, and certainly the metaphor comes from that. The metaphor is that you plant, take zera, you plant it in the ground. So in this case, the ground is the blood of the woman. And the Ramban says that the dam hanida is mazik v'teva, and even if there's a little dam hanida left, in fact, one of the things the Ramban has to explain is, what if the woman, one of the halachas, I think I mentioned this, if a woman could be a nida, she could be postmenopausal, she could have not have had any bleeding in the last 10 years, she's still a nida until she goes to the mikveh once. So the question is, well, why? So the Ramban has to give some type of an explanation, because until she goes to the mikveh, then she's titaher b'machshava. It's the last line in the Ramban on Ve'lishev nidas tovasa. Ki oz titaher gam b'machshavta utiya nekiya legamri. Because he has to explain if it's really about something damaging about dam hanida and all the dam hanida is gone. So what's the issue? So tefila is mitaher b'machshava. Danny?
Yeah, it sort of seems like, you know, that in addition to something about being mitaher b'machshava, which we didn't really understand, it also seems like that Ramban was sort of relating to the Toman Tara as a sort of, like, merely, without using the term gezer, like, just sort of, some sort of, like, way to distance oneself from the physically damaging properties. Which would sort of run counter to, like, any sort of model that, you know, at least we'd thought of, or I thought of previously, for Toman Tara, at least, like, any sort of, like, philosophical model for it.
Real, I mean, Mitzora certainly seems to be that. No?
Mitzora?
It may be the result of...
I'm pretty sure it's not just about the, like, physically...
Well, so there may be a component... Well, it's easy. There's a component of sin also. Need also has a component of sin. Harba harba etzonech veheronech be'etzef tel divanim.
Is that nida? That's just pain in the child.
Dam nida and dam besulim. It's all mentioned in there. And then you're looking at Chazal, at least. And the Ramban can be working in that model. So, okay, you're right, it may be, I mean, look, you're thinking about, you're saying the Ramban's contention about contagion. I mentioned Mitzora because the Ramban describes Nida almost like it has the din of Mitzora, even though Nida doesn't have the din of Mitzora.
So the point is that, like, the Toman Tara for the Ramban doesn't seem to, like, reflect necessarily some sort of metaphysical, like, status of Toman Tara, or, like, some sort of, like, arbitrary, you know, cloak that God, you know, imposes some sort of state of Toman Tara, right? Some sort of stricture of Toman Tara for indescribable reasons, more that it's a simple, like, way to distance oneself from physical harm.
So, to be honest, though, I don't know that the Ramban is giving that as the explanation for the Torah's Toman Tara. The Ramban gives that as the explanation of why Enida was outcast. Right, in other words, the Ramban says, that's the reason why, in other words, Nida, to the extent that it is what you have in the Brice of Nida, where she has her own hut, right, and she leaves, and she's isolated.
It's called Nida, though.
That's why she's called the Nida, because people would treat her that way. Does he ever say that that's why the Torah gives Tumah? He explains that's why Bia is Asur, because Bia is only supposed to be productive Bia, and there it's going to... And note, by the way, there, Bia is not prohibited because the husband's going to catch something, remember. It's because the offspring will be negative. But so it doesn't sound like from the Ramban that Toma is a function of trying to keep you away from something.
The history of Allah, Shalati Gaba Kodesh, what's that about? Mikdash?
Does he not say that that's why her Mishka becomes Tame, because it's dangerous?
Okay, there you have it. You'd have the Chenech Beotim Roshim and Eva Mishka Beosim and Amalga. Okay. Fine, but... So, it's
yeah, I don't have any conclusions to draw from it. It's just, like, sort of,
okay.
It seems to run counter to...
Now, the one who says that Nida is about keeping away from Nezek is... The Chenech. Right? And not about the child being born. He throws that in as an afterthought. Right? They read the Chinuch Mati, and then you'll be and done your duty. And here you hear the voice of Aristotle. I mean, the humors or something like that. Okay. Right. So people's sins cause their bodies to come into an imbalance, and that is why they get sick. Okay? And therefore, kvar amarnu. Okay, so that's a different view, right? The Ramban understands is that since Tashmish is primarily for the purpose of offspring, any Tashmish that by definition would lead to bad offspring obviously is prohibited. The Chinuch says he throws in a line at the end also about the Vlad, but really it's about keeping away from sickness. That's really that's more explicitly not the Tumah Vatara, but that's what Nida is about. Okay. So anyway, one of the things I think that does come through is that it's not true for the Ravid, and it's not true for the Chinuch, but it's true for the Rambam and the Ramban, is the Rambam and the Ramban both view human sexuality as essentially a necessity for reproduction, and not much else. Otherwise, ideally, it should be minimized as much as possible. That is not at all the sense of the Ravid or even the Chinuch. The Chinuch sees it as something which is just to protect you from danger. At least Nida certainly isn't. And the Ravid understands that the purpose of Nida would be to just give you a reminder that everything comes through Bon Shalom and he and you always have to be cognizant of his presence.
What does the Rambam think like Ona means?
So the question you have to ask is how do the Rambam and the Ramban, both of them, how do they conceive of the mitzvah of Ona? Adin?
Do we know that the Ramban disapproves of as long as it's with your wife and you are married to someone who can produce viable offspring, he disapproves of having a lot of intercourse?
So, I don't think the Ramban, to the best of my knowledge, ever says it quite that way. He does, in Kedoshim Tiyu, talk about having healthy limits, but there's minimal, there is
normal,
there is maximal, right? So the Ramban there, I think, is just saying that you shouldn't be engaged in maximal bia. But this would suggest that you should be engaged in minimal bia. But I don't think that's a position that I don't know that he explicitly adopts.
Or is it just that it's not, if it is...
And just remember, for those who are familiar with the Geras HaKodesh L'Ramban, it wasn't written by the Ramban, so don't appeal to that for anything. Yes.
Could it just be that any sex that is not for Kiyum Hamin is repulsive, but if it is, then it could be at the normal level, like with your wife?
There,
or not with one of your,
well,
not with one of the Arai, like with anyone besides the Arai.
No, but the point is that there should be a binary there. It's either Lakiyum Hamin because your wife could possibly become pregnant or not.
So as long as your wife could possibly become pregnant, as long as it's not Nida, then that he's totally
fine. If she's postmenopausal, she can't become pregnant. And if she's pregnant, she can't become pregnant. We hope not. If she's nursing, she's not likely to become pregnant. Right? So all those cases is not going to work. Jacob?
Yeah, I was about to ask, what would the Ramban say?
He can't say that it's Asr, because we know that it's Mutter. Right? So would he say it should be discouraged? I don't know. It's a real question to whoever was asked. What do you, Yudi asked, what do you do? What is the Ramban? How does he frame the mitzvah of Ona? Now, I know what it's possible they could say. It would not make me so comfortable, but they could argue the mitzvah of Ona as presented by the Torah is a husband's obligation to a wife. It's clear from Maseches Ksubos that the obligation, and Nedarim, that the obligation goes both ways. Meaning, a woman who takes a neder that her husband shouldn't be Neneh from Tashmish with her, it's not a neder because she's Meshubed Eslam. And the same thing in reverse. Now, what is the basis of her being Meshubed Deslo? Unless that's just part of the contract, the marriage. He's Meshubed Deslo because he has a mitzvah ona. Now, so it's possible the Ramban and the Rambam would say that from her vantage point, you know, because the Rambam would say, das hakala shel anashim or something like that, and therefore she's entitled to it, and he has no choice but to do so. But if she doesn't care, then ideally he should just minimize as much as possible. Right? They could say that. They could view this as being directed more. I mean, you know, it could be a woman studying this also, but that's probably not the audience. If you just think about who the Rambam and the Ramban are writing for, they probably didn't even think they were writing for most of us. But in principle, they're writing for most of us. They're not thinking about writing for an audience of women. So it might be that this, you know, that, yeah, of course there's a mitzvah of ona. So if you're mechuyev ona, you have no choice. That's the din. But, you know, if you are a person studying Torah and know better, so you should preferably say, you know, if your wife doesn't care, so then, you know.
He says in the Mishnah Torah, doesn't like the, pretty much the more of a Talmud Chacham, like a real Talmud Chacham will only engage in intercourse like once a month, and someone who's a little bit loaded.
Firstly, Leil, Onas Tamid Chacham is Leil Shabbos and Leil Shabbos once a week. It's a Gemara in Ksubos. I don't know which Rambam you're referring to.
I definitely see, like if you're an Am Haaretz, if you're a little bit learned, like any, unless I'm totally making this up, that it's as
maybe.
The firmer you get, the less intercourse you should have.
I'm not telling you no, but I would like to see it. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I think I saw it too, but I think that's because like you're immersed in the Torah or something like that. But yeah, I thought it was weird too. But it's any chance that I think the Rambam.
There's a notion that the ona of a person is obligated is proportionate to the work burden he's carrying.
Yeah.
That's not a comment about is Tashmish good or bad. That starts with the Sugya and Ksubas and Daf Samach Aleph, but that's just based upon what is reasonable to demand of a husband.
Yeah.
Right? If he's exhausted, so, you know, if he works in a very hard job, so expecting to have a mitzvah ona every night is crazy. Whereas the Tayalim, the people, who have, you say they inherited a lot of money and they spend their day, you know, in Starbucks, you know, schmoozing, hanging out, and so on. So they have a mitzvah of ona b'cholayla, right? Because for them, they don't do anything physically demanding, so it's not much. It's not so much to ask of them. Zach?
I heard that Gemara in Ksubas says that, like, Tamil Chacham is allowed to earn, not even Tamil Chacham, you're allowed to leave your wife without permission for 30 days.
Correct. But
so I would say that's what...
That's not because Tashmish is to be minimized upon. It's just Tamil Chacham, he wants to go learn in yeshiva, and by doing...
I'm reading that, I could hear why he would write what Adin's quoting right now, and based on...
I don't think that... Well, anyway, you'll go find such a text that you said. I don't think the Rambam is saying advisory from the perspective of Miyot Tashmish. He's talking about the obligation of Ona.
Yeah.
And the Talmud Chacham, you know, look, you know, it's nice that, you know, she married Yeshiva Bachar, so she's got to know that he sometimes, you know, a special Magid Shir is going to be in a certain place, and he's going to go there. That's all. Okay. Any questions about this particular, the first piece? If not, I think we've given it its fair treatment. So I want to just, I don't know if I spoke, did I talk about the Rabbi Akiva Gemara yet in Shabbos? So I just wanted to mention one other thing, which is, I think, important to realize just in terms of the historical evolution of the observance of Nida. Now, some would say to me, doesn't that sound like conservative Judaism? But the answer is it's a Braisa in the Gemara and Shabbos. Right? When the Ramban describes what Nida is, what it was in some places, about the woman being an outcast, the woman not, you know, everything she looks at is bad. By the way, the mirror trick, I think that if you stand a long enough time staring into a mirror, anybody, you're going to see red spots, you know, as a function of the eye. And the only reason why men didn't see it in those days is because men didn't use mirrors. And once at a certain point, the imagination can run wild, and so women looking into mirrors and staring too long, and they can think, oh, that must be because I'm a Nida. And once these things get started, they have a life of their own, and no amount of empirical evidence will disprove them. You know that as a general rule in life, that once a person has made up his mind about a theory, then it's very hard to dislodge that. As the popular expression goes, I made up my mind, don't confuse me with the facts. So anyway, the Gemara in Shabbos does point to this, though. The Gemara says... The Tanya, it was the supplemental sheet that I sent you. A woman's a nida, she basically should be dressed like a shlumpf. She shouldn't look nice, she shouldn't try to make herself look nice. which isn't very good for multiple reasons. It's not good for the relationship, as Rabbi Akiva will say, and it's not good for her either, her own psychological well-being. So the Gemara says, "Ad she about Rabbi Akiva v'limia that no, im kenat the megana abayla v'nim se abayla megarsha elamato malomar pahadava benidasa benidasa tehei ad she tavo b'mayim." Now, of course, I could see someone saying today, "Well, today now that we have the chayim of Rabbi Gershom, we can't divorce her, so maybe she should go back to the days of the zikena marishon." The answer is no. Rabbi Akiva's point is that being a nida does not mean that the husband and wife, you know, are living on two separate planets, but rather it's simply that davaba nidasa doesn't mean that she is sick and apart and so on, but rather means she remains benidasa until she goes to the mikveh, which is a din I mentioned to you before, that once a woman is a nida, until, it doesn't matter if she stopped bleeding for 10 years, she's still a nida. And obviously, what is Rabbi Akiva saying that a nida may do? There's one explicit thing. She can be kocheles and pokesas, and miskashetes bevigdei tzivonim. Yes, Mati.
Does this mean that Rabbi Akiva's opinion that she has to go to the mikveh? Sounds like
excellent question. Lots of the Rishonim here start to ask themselves, how did the Zakenim or Rishonim know that Enida had to go to the mikveh? Now, I know what some of you are thinking, which is, of course, possible, but it's not an answer that any Rishon would ever have given. What is the answer that you're thinking about, Mati? Because you know the Rambam's theory of Torah Shebaal Peh. What's that? Rabbi Akiva was Mechadish, which I doubt he was Mechadish out of thin air, but is it possible that once upon a time somebody held like the Karaites? In other words, the Rambam's theory of Torah Shebaal Peh is that through Midosh HaTorah Nedreshes Bahen and Svara, the Chachamim can derive new laws. Who's to say that the law of a Nida going to the mikveh was Misinai? Maybe it's a Din D'oraisa that develops later. That's not an answer that the Rishonim are going to give. Obviously, I don't have evidence one way or the other about it. I would use this Gemara as evidence, by the way. I have a suspicion that long before Rabbi Akiva, Nidos were going to the mikveh. I can't prove that. But the Rishonim come up with other what makor did the Zakenim HaRishonim use? They have other makoros. There are several makoros, by the way, offered in the Rishonim for the fact that a Nida has to go to the mikveh. In fact, interestingly enough, the fact that they don't quote this Gemara is odd, because the Gemara itself provides the makor, unless there's a different way of reading the Gemara. The Rambam, I think, offers what I think to be the most logical suggestion, even though it's not absolutely airtight in terms of proof, which is, and you know, one of you was at, you that you were asking about this.
Yeah, it's an opinion from the case of
Valkyrie, right? Baruch Atzuv Alayim V'Tamu Ad Arav. I know, no, that's the parsha of Valkyrie, those three psukim. Baruch Atzuv Alayim V'Tamu Ad Ha'arev. So from there is a binyanav that for everything in the parsha, you require tefillah in order to be olam, you know, mituma l'tara, and you extend it from tuma v'tara to iser v'heter as well. There is Rabbeinu Tam, I think, says the makor is ach b'meini da yischata mayim shanida tovel aspahen. Okay. Anyway, we assume that is a chiyuv d'oraisa for Anita to go to the mikveh. There's no chiyuv to go to the mikveh, but if she doesn't, then she has bia. So that's an issur kares. So what has happened here, I think, is very, very important. And this is only a piece that belongs in a chassan's class as much as it does in shir, but I'll say it now for the marriage and the eventually to be married, which is one of the very, very difficult things in Taharas HaMishpacha is that when the wife becomes a Nida, is you have this separation. And the Torah obligates us to have a physical separation. However, a physical separation does not necessarily, should not imply a separation of emotion. This is apparently, reading a little bit of the literature, a very common problem in the observance of Taharas HaMishpacha, where the physical separations leads to even emotional detachment. Now, obviously, there are harchakos, but harchakos do not mean that one is not emotionally connected to one's spouse when she's a nida. It just means that you follow the harchakos. But it is very, very, very important. And on some level, it really is reflective of the transition from Zakenim HaRishonim to Rabbi Akiva's vision of nida. The Zakenim HaRishonim saw nida as Vanish Shchula V'Galmuda. As the Gemara Rosh Hashanah Dachafa says, Galmuda, how does it come to mean what it means? Gemula da mibala, she is weaned from her husband. That's how they take Galmuda. Galmuda, shulava Galmuda means bereft and desolate, right? But Rabbi Akiva's vision of Nida is not that. Rabbi Akiva's vision of Nida is that Nidasa teha chetava b'mayim, but not that she should engage in a way that distances herself from being attractive to her husband, right? So anyway, I think it's very important to keep this Gemara in mind. Interestingly enough, you will find, I think in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's difficult in some ways, I don't know if it's in the Shulchan Aruch or in some of the Rishonim, who seem to view this Gemara as a bidyevet, the bidyei tzivonim and so on. And I'm not sure how you see that in the Gemara.
Rabbi Akiva is the bidyevet?
What Rabbi Akiva is saying is only bidyevet. And I'm not really sure how one gets that from the Gemara. We'll encounter, when we get to that later in the year, I think it's Simon Kuftzadi Vav, where the Harchakos are. So we'll talk about it when we get there. But in terms of reading the Gemara Peshuto, Rabbi Akiva represents something of a revolution in the relationship between Anita and her husband from, you know, called Shchulava Galmuda into the Minidasa Tehei Achetava Malayim. Adin?
Do you think that the Pshat Gemara suggests that Rabbi Akiva's Chiddush or new limud was brought about because he saw the harm on marriages that was occurring, or
I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if it's this. Look, Rabbi, you know, you can. There's always fun to engage in a Freudian, psychobiography here, right? What was Rabbi Akiva's relationship with his wife?
I asked Dan during Seder, Rabbi Akiva get thrown out of the YU-based medrash for this limud.
I'm sorry.
Would Rabbi Akiva had this limud today?
I'm not trying to understand the question, but Rabbi Akiva. I don't know, was Rabbi Akiva a romantic? You know, the Gemara is in Nedarim or in Shabbos with the Irshel Zahav, right? Taking a piece of straw out of her hair, something like that. So I don't know, does Rabbi Akiva's, in other words, here's a story. Bizman Hazeh, it's very important to be sensitive to that because unfortunately, divorce is an option and it's become contagious. Believe it or not, there is such a thing. It becomes socially acceptable. And therefore, there's a greater need for preserving shalom bayis at every single turn. In a society in which divorce is not an option, issues of being miskana al-baila are a little less of a pressing concern because, okay, guess what? There are people who've been married for 60 years and the wife is still complaining he doesn't put the toilet seat down. You're supposed to put the toilet seat down. By the way, just record that now if you don't know that already. The point is that there are things that people do that annoy their spouses. The question of whether a marriage stays together is partially a function of the cost-benefit analysis, right? I hope no one would want to get divorced because her husband doesn't put the toilet seat down no matter how many times she asks him. At the same time, there are things that are more serious. But in a given, in a given society, that threshold may be different. So I can't imagine Rabbi Akiva's time. I mean, again, he says, Megarsha, I can't imagine I guess the husband, even for him, there's a cost in divorcing her, right? In other words, he's going to have to pay a ksuba. Right, and he doesn't have grounds for forfeiting a ksuba because she didn't put on a bignei tzivonim. Right, that's not one of the terms of the contract of marriage. So I don't know how much it's really a statement about causing dissolution of marriages as it is simply what is a good, healthy marriage.
But the way that the Gemara parallels that the heter of the two specific hair coverings are kadesh lo titkane al ba'ala, just like the Tanya Rabbi Akiva made this limud kadesh lo titkane.
You're suggesting that's how someone might get them to be the avid.
Yeah, they're sensitive to like that. We don't want limudim just that are spurred entirely by contextual issues and not by.
But it sort of is, right? Another thing for me, Akiva said the question of whether to treat how to act upon Rabbi Akiva's suggestion really depends partially upon your reality. But I think that Kalisha's Gan al Baila is even by the Panachris. I don't think. It indicates a bidyevet status. It indicates when the Chachamim were making gzeros, they had to decide what were the impacts of various kinds of gzeros. They're always competing values. The reason to have, the reason to argue against Rabbi Akiva's limud is you don't want people coming to violate the Isur Nida. You don't want emotional intimacy leading to physical intimacy. The counterbalance is you don't want emotional distance leading to a bad marriage. Right? So we all agree that preserving Hilchos Nida, preserving those gedarim, is important. We also all agree that shalom bayis in a healthy marriage is important. So the question is, I don't know if you can talk about what's bidyevet and lechatchila. No, because what's a bidyevet for one is lechatchila for the other.
So it doesn't have difficulty with like the halacha category of bidyevet, but it certainly it seems radical.
I think it is radical because it, as opposed to peyanachris, which is just do you make the gzera here or not? You know, how far do you make the gzera? Here it suggests a completely different view. I agree. That's why I presented it as such. I thought you were suggesting why maybe some would have seen it as a little more bidyevet, but okay. All right. So from here, this, what we have done now, I think, is a very important broad introduction to thinking about sexuality as a Jewish value. We may touch upon it other times of the year as well. It may come up. But now we sort of move into the mode of really, I'll call it the nitty-gritty of halacha, but first we have to deal with some of the overarching, you know, framework of Nida. And so that's why we're now going to turn to one of the more difficult topics in Shas, which is, you know, the hardest Masechta in Shas, without a doubt, I believe, is Kenim, the end of Kenim. Any of you haven't done the last Mishnah in Kenim? How many of you have seen the last Mishnah in Kenim? Okay. There probably should be, I'm sure there are papers that have already been written on game theory and something like that on it. It is the most confused, what? Yeah, so it is an exceedingly confusing Mishnah that it's really, really hard to make sense of. I think the rest of Kenim is doable, but it can be hard for people. So Kenim and Pischei Nida, hein Gufei Torah. So this is, welcome Rabosai, to Pischei Nida. And some of you, I think, have gotten on a smooth road, and some of you hit some bumps, so now it's time to sort of try to smooth out the bumps. Unfortunately, the Rambam doesn't make life very easy in this context. I will, Amir Tzashem, send you, I may make changes to it, but I'm going to send you a spreadsheet that I compiled. It's an odd kind of spreadsheet because other than numbers of days in the left column, all it has is colored boxes. And you'll probably be able to figure out my key, but I'll tell you the key if I can remember it right now. It's to explain the Gemara in Daf Nun Dalid in Nida, which is on the Mari Makomas. So just remember the following. Red means she's bleeding. In that column, white means she's not. Okay, that's a dead giveaway. In this, there are three columns, okay? In the middle column of three that go in blocks, if you see kind of an, there is an orangish color, and there's like a magenta color. I believe, I may have it backwards, one of them represents, according to either the Ramban or the Rambam, you'll see the columns labeled on top, one represents if you're in Shiva Shimei Nida, or if you're in Yud Alf Yom Shimei Nida Lanida, which for the Rambam, you're always in one or the other. For the Ramban, if you see a white in there, it means you're neither. You're in limbo until she sees down the next time.
At least for the Rambam, the purple was Shimei Nida, and the orange was...
And the orange was Yud Alf Yom. It's just, then that's the way it is. And then, finally, in the third column, yellow means she's Asur Labayla because she's a Nida, bright yellow. If it is bright green, is that she's Asur Labayla because she's a Zava, a bleeding Zava. If it is light blue, then she is a Shomer Shiyom Keneged Yom or Shomer Shiva Nekiyim. Okay? That's
I think the key is definitely going to need to be on the...
You'll figure it out. I did this, I told some of you in Seder, I was starting to go through the Gemara Nida again, and I said, you know, I need to write this down. I can't do it. The Gemara Nida has cases like the following. A woman who, they have lots of interesting hypothetical women. A woman who bleeds one day, then she doesn't the next. The third day, not the next. She bleeds only on the odd days. And then a woman who bleeds 2 days and doesn't bleed 2 days. And then bleeds 2 days and doesn't bleed 2 days. Kacha ad olam. Then three, then four, then five, then six, then seven, then eight. I think they get to 10 maybe. No, they do go beyond 10 actually. They go. It's a little interesting. I don't think that any such woman ever existed. That's my bet. But just as most of the scenarios in Yavamos in the first parak never existed either. So I needed to write it down, and then I didn't have paper hand. I said, you know what? A spreadsheet would be a good idea. And then I stopped and said, wait, I did this once before, 5 years ago, and I looked up, and lo and behold, there's a spreadsheet. So I made some additions and some changes on it, but I will send it out to you, and you should be able to figure out sort of what's going on. It most directly relates to the Gemara in Nida Daf Nun Dalet. But let's take a few minutes to talk about the Gemara the Mishnah and the Gemara and Arachin, okay? So the Gemara in Arachin says, who would like to read for me? Adin.
Ein petach b'toev b'shiva b'lo yeter al shivasar.
Okay, now you have to understand, as the Gemara will ask the question and give the answer in this sugya, this Mishnah is not interested in finding out when a woman can go to the mikveh. You want to know how to know a woman who's confused, you know when she can go to the mikveh? When she's Shiva Nekiyah. Even Bisman Hagen, before we had the Chumrah of Rabbi Zeir, Benos Yisrael, Achmir, Atzman, Shafil, Rose, Tipos, Tam, Kachardol, Yoshua Salav Shirin Nikiyim. Before that Chumrah, if a woman is a Toa, in order to be able to cohabit with her husband, she needs Shiva Nikiyim. That would have been, and that would have been a very simple Mishnah. Doesn't matter how many days that she knows she's bled. Doesn't matter which part of the cycle might have been in. Shiva Nikiyim, you know a woman is Torah. You know why? Because if she bled a particular day, if that were Tchilas Nida, were to be Tchilas Nida, she only needs six more days. She waits seven, good. Kabbalah Bracha. If it was Yimei Ziva, if she was a Zava, she has Shiva Nikiyim. Then she can go to the mikveh. But the fact that she can go to the mikveh doesn't tell us where she is in the 7-11 cycle. Ideally, a woman is supposed to know that if, when she's going to bleed, whether she's in either or a Zava. So the Mishnah is going to tell us the following. The Gemara explaining the Mishnah in all the numbers is going to explain the following. If a woman knows that she has bled the previous X days, and she has absolutely no idea where she was in her cycle, where in the 7-11, and she actually doesn't even know what happened before X days. She knows she bled the last 5 days. What about 6 days ago? It's not that she didn't bleed, it's that she doesn't know. I have no idea what happened before those. The Braisa, following the principle laid out by the Mishnah, is going to try to explain to us how many clean days does she need in order to be sure that the next time that she bleeds will be the beginning of her Nida cycle, the beginning of a 7-11. Right now, I don't even know how to explain this Mishnah according to the Rambam. There's got to be a way. The Ramban didn't either. But we're going to work with the Ramban's assumption here. The Ramban's assumption is, to remind you, a woman who bleeds for the first time becomes a Nida. She's a Nida for 7 days, including the first day she bled on, no matter what. She goes to the mikveh the night of the 8th. For the next 11 days, if she doesn't bleed, wonderful. And then when it comes to day 19, the 11 days have passed, the next time she bleeds, whether it's day 19, day 20, day 21, day 26, from the day she bleeds, she starts 7-11 again. That's why for the Ramban, you can have magenta, which was the orange, which was the Nida.
Orange was the Yimei Ziva.
All right, so you can have magenta, you can have orange, and then you can have blank space. Right, because there's a period for the Ramban where the woman is not in Yimei Nida or Yimei Ziva, but whenever she will bleed, will begin Shiva Yimei Nida. And then she's not within the 18-day frame. Okay, the Rambam is bechlalder.
Wait, so according to the Rambam, like, let's say she doesn't, you know, she does her 7, and she, I guess, like, she finishes her 11-day Zava thing, and then she bleeds, but it's not really her period.
Well, we don't recognize such a thing for the moment. Assuming that bleeding comes, let's say, with hargasha, that is done, you know, unless it's a makkah, that, you know, if it's hormonally, self-hormonally induced or otherwise endometrial bleeding, that's called nida. Right? The Rambam says that all bleeding, all endometrial, but he doesn't use that term, but all endometrial lining, you know, bleeding from the breakdown, be it nida, zava, yoledes, which is the breakdown of endometrial lining, you know, once the pregnancy is over, koshi, which is probably contractions of labor, and there was a fifth kind there. What was the fifth? Dam toar also, right, of the Leda. It's all fundamentally, biologically the same. It's the breakdown, we would say it's the breakdown of endometrial lining for different under different circumstances. So it's all the same thing. So for the Rambam, it doesn't really matter, unless it's damak, unless it's really just a wound. So it's all dam, and depending on when it happens, that determines your status, right? Dam Toar is the same thing as Dam Nida, but she's Tohor Levila. Jacob?
If she bleeds on the 11th day of the Yimei
Ziva, does she have to keep Shemar Yisrael Kenega? Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, and we paskin like Beis Hillel that Midin Doraisa, no, but Midrabanan, he's a Gargaron. It's a question whether it's an Issid Rabanan or just a comment. The Gargaron means that, what's a Gargaron? He's a... not grubby, but he has a big appetite. Not a compliment either way. It seems to be machlokes amaron whether gargaron is usser or just it's a label.
That would be considered like a 12th day, or
no? The point is, even if you have to keep it, it belongs to the new cycle. In other words, even if you have to keep the 12th, even if you're not allowed to be on the 12th day, if she bleeds on it, it's the first day of nida. There's a machlokes amaron. This is part of Siman Kof Pei Gimel, the Daraisa framework. I will send you to those gemaras. I don't know if I have them. It's not yet on these makars. I have to see if the next set has it. There's a machlokas Reish Lakish Riochan. What if she bleeds on the 10th day? Now, do you need Shomer Siyom Keneged Yom if something is not roi to turn into a Zava Gadola? Because you can't have 3 days, right? So that's a machlokas Reish Lakish Riochan right near the end of the Mesachta. And you will come to look at that eventually. Yes, you did, yeah?
Is there any reason that the Mishnah tries to bring her back to the first day of the Nida cycle as opposed to the first day of the Zava cycle?
Yeah, because you want to know what you are, because if you're a Zava and you bleed 3 days, you have to bring a Karban Bavadai.
Right.
And if you don't know where you are and you bleed 3 days, you might have to bring a Karban Besafik, which is a pain. Right. So a woman, it's good for a woman just to minimize on her separation from her husband, to minimize on Tumah. Right, remember, the Rivash was asked the question, Ramah quotes it in the Siman at the end. The Rivash was asked the question, why don't single women go to the mikveh? The answer is, because Tumah V'Taharah no longer applies, so allowing them to go to the mikveh is simply asking them, you know, to fool around because the Issur will be that much less. But Bizman HaGemara, only those who went to the mikveh, or certainly Bizman HaMishnah, they all went to the mikveh because Tumah V'Taharah was at stake and you don't want to be in the state of Tumah because everything you touched was Tumah. Right, so it's in a woman's interest to know exactly where she is.
My question isn't whether she needs to know exactly where she is. My question was why did Chazal try and place her at the beginning of the Nida cycle, at the end of the Nida cycle?
There's no marking at the beginning of the Ziva cycle.
The beginning of the Ziva cycle.
There is no marking there.
It's the same cycle, just why 1 point over another?
Well, you can't get to Ziva until you've had Shiva Shimei Nida.
For
the Ramban, even for the Rambam, by the way, the first time in her life, she can't get the Ziva until she's had Nida. But for the Ramban, the first time she bleeds, she's a Nida 7 days. Then 11 days, she'll be Nida Lanida. After that, we wait until she gets bleeding again. Right? The only Raya I can think of, it's not a Raya, one of the Rayas that might be brought for the Rambam Shita is that when the Mishnah talks about Yoledes, a pregnant woman who's Makasha, and she bleeds, the question is, you know, can she become a Zava that way? Well, how does she become a Zava that way? After all, she's not Nida. She hasn't gotten a period of months. The answer is, that might point to the Rambam's view, right, that it's just automatic. It could be a Ziva. The counter answer is that a woman who's a Yoledes, a woman who's pregnant, can become a Nida. She can have breakthrough bleeding. You know, she can. First thing you do when that happens is you call the doctor, because it could be it could be a sign, a worrisome sign medically. But she could have had, you know, just a little bit of bleeding, made her a Nida, and now, 8 days later, it's now be Meziva. But at first glance, it looks like the Rambam Shita, because how do you ever have a pregnant woman who's be Meziva, you know, after the first month or something like that?
For the Rambam, like, she cannot be a Nida for, like, a period, but just be a Zava, like, let's say it's 7-11.
The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Yeah, the Rambam Shita is not an easy Shita to work with. It's not easy to work with, and it's not easy to fit into a number of the sugyas. Yehuda?
We still call today's convention to know where she is in her cycle.
Today doesn't matter, because you just keep Shiva Nikim. There's no Tumah V'Taharah. There are no Karbanos.
So we don't hold there's any intrinsic advantage of everything.
Today.
Yeah.
Correct.
People don't keep track.
Correct. But you want to learn to do it anyway because Meher Yibana Beis HaMikdash and that will be relevant. So.
And it will be relevant.
The Rambam is a big deal if you lose track.
This is, Rambam is a really big deal. Fortunately, we don't paschal like the Rambam. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know.
You have to track your whole life.
What? Well, it was never Lamaisa, so we don't really know how they paschal the Rambam. Matt, last question. We'll stop after this. Okay. Well, firstly, remember that Zava was not a common thing. When you look at the Mishnayos, for example, in Krasos, for the most part, women were bringing karbanos for Leda. Leda and a miscarriage, that would have been late enough in the thing. That's why they were bringing karbanos. They weren't, you know, I don't think you're going to see too common that they were bringing a Zava. One doesn't get the impression, right? You know, there are Mishnayos that talk about, it's a famous Mishnah, about Rabbi Gamliel decided to announce the halacha wrong because the bird merchants were jacking up the prices. So he got up and announced that a woman who has multiple ledos only has to bring one cane. Right? The Ikar did is she has to bring all the kinah, but once she brings the first pair of birds, she can eat kachem at that point. But he got up and announced, he said, I will not go to Hamon Hazeh, im olin halayla, you know, unless the price of kinim and Yushalayim are less than X. And he got up and made that announcement, and lo and behold, you know, the market fell out from underneath the kinim, and the merchants got what they deserved, and the speculators probably did too. But the example they choose to give is not an Isha Shahisa Le Chamesh Zivos, it's Isha Chamesh, you know, Ledos, I believe. Okay. You guys are asking a lot of questions, that's okay.
So
that was the book.
kill the laissez-faire cat, that would more.
Danny, how do we stop this then?
Press the top.
He killed
top right.
And then top right button.
This?
And go down. Press the down button.
Carefully.
And stop. Just go to stop.
In the middle.